get up, get up, get up. What is up, Mets fans? Welcome back to episode 111 of the Mets Up Podcast, the official podcast of the New York Mets, going over the San Diego Padres series, in which there were some peaks and valleys, I think you could say, pretty easily, some ups and downs here. We're not going to talk too much in depth about the first few games, just because it's not a whole lot there that we're really excited about talking. A
couple games, not a few.
Well, yeah, a couple, true. Yeah. First two is a couple, not a few. Game three, much better. Game three, much better. We're more excited to talk about that one. And then let's be honest, the trade deadline's about a week away, and we have the Subway Series coming up. It's going to be the main topic of today's episode. Yeah. So if you guys are enjoying what you're listening to, what you're seeing, make sure you're following us on all our social media at MetsUp. That'll be on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. If you're looking for the YouTube video, it is on the New York Mets YouTube page. Don't go to MetsUp YouTube. Go to the New York Mets, talking to more and more people, and apparently they had no clue.
Sad. So sad. A guy came up to us at the game on Friday and was like, what happened to you guys?
Yeah.
We were like, oh, wait, what do you mean?
did you not see us on the board before the game? Like, we're now with the New York Mets. We're actually doing way better than we ever were. But
we forgot to record that. We should record something for the old YouTube
channel. Yeah, we'll do that right before the Subway Series, maybe. Yeah. So if you are looking for this on the old YouTube channel, or you just saw that video, you can now watch this one and see us actually with the New York Mets now, which is probably huge news to you if you haven't seen us.
I'd be shocked. Yeah. Oh my God, I thought these guys stopped.
Yeah, no, they're actually doing better than ever. If you're not listening, or if you're listening to us, I should say, not listening. If you are listening to us, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts, drop us a rating, drop us a review. Saw some new reviews out there. Shout out to you guys dropping the honest truth about the best Mets podcast out there.
We got back to a 5-star rating on Spotify after it went briefly down to 4.9 for a little while. So thank you guys for that. But can you tell from this long and rambling intro that's 11:30 at night?
Yeah, it's 11:30 at night. We didn't even go to the stadium for this game because it was like, all right, let's give the Mets a little bit of a break. It's going to be a long night if we go to the stadium and production has to handle all the editing and stuff like that behind the scenes, along with driving home wherever they have to go. So today, we're doing it back for what is going to be the last episode
probably in
my current Astoria apartment.
My former bedroom.
Yeah, James' former bedroom, my current office. This will be the last Mets Up episode filmed here. Have no fear, though. We'll have another spot for you whenever we're not at the stadium still. Yeah.
Best moment of recording the podcast in this room.
I mean, I feel like the Max Scherzer one is always what I draw back to. I mean, Max Scherzer news. We had that huge spaces, and like all these spaces also are part of the reason as to why the Mets ended up finding us, which is also really cool.
I still think that the last episode we did before the official Mets start was like one of the most fun ones.
That was cool, yeah. Like being all jazzed up about like, oh my goodness, and then you dropping in like, we're the official podcast of the Mets. Like,
and we went out afterwards, some of your friends. That was a good time.
Yeah, no, that was a good time. But all of it ended up being with us going out after. I think we enjoy social aspects.
Yeah, we like the fun part of it. But yeah, a lot of memories in this room for me and this podcast. It's going to be funny to watch it fade away.
Yeah, and then we'll have a new spot for you guys very, very soon. Let's go ahead, though, and talk about the start of the series. Padres coming in after the All-Star break. Padres are one of the better teams in the National League, but they weren't playing particularly well going into the break. The
Padres might just kind of be our kryptonite, especially the way it lined up facing the Padres the first three games after the break. If you face the Padres for a random series, chances are you aren't going to see all of their best pitchers come up to you in a row. The Mets happen to get all their best pitchers, and we know the Mets struggles against Darvish, Blake Snell, handled us on Saturday, then came to Sunday. It looked like Joe Musgrove was doing the same. We found a way to break through, but it just kind of keeps going on with the theme this year that this Mets lineup seems to struggle against very good starting pitching.
Which is also kind of understandable. Like when
it
you
makes
do,
logical sense.
Yeah, logically, it's just like, man, I would love to be able to hit you, Darvish, because, I mean, game one, outside of the lack of offense in game one and two, the vibes at the park were awesome.
Awesome, very good. A lot of people there, great giveaways, all series two.
Yeah.
Was Friday a giveaway?
No, Friday, I don't think there was. Friday was Korean night.
Yeah, and WWE night.
Yes.
Okay, those, yeah, double.
So that's what happened. Saturday, you had the Funko Pops.
One of the craziest giveaways in the history of the Mets. Yeah. Very, very hot market item that night.
Yes, tight security, for sure.
Tight security and the Funko Pops.
What were you going
to say? Just, do you want to make sure people get a lot of Funko Pops? Because you know the resale value of these is going to be pretty major. Funko Pops themselves are like a hilariously popular collectible. This is the only time you're ever going to get a David Wright Captain America one.
It's pretty cool. I'm not going to lie. I'm glad we ended up getting one, which is nice.
We did end up getting one.
We did miss the Gil Hodges bobblehead, though, which I guess is also a good time to talk about. Gil Hodges in the Hall of Fame, deserving.
Yeah, absolutely. His daughter gave a great speech. A lot of guys got in the Hall of Fame on Sunday that kind of were due to get into the Hall of Fame for a while. And then also David Ortiz, which, however you feel about David Ortiz being a first ballot Hall of Famer, that's whatever. We're not going to bog down this episode of Hall of Fame talk, but very nice to see the Hodges family there. And for Mrs. Hodges to still be alive. She wasn't there presently, but to still be alive to see it. And Howie told a crazy story today about why it actually took Gil Hodges so long to get into the Hall.
What do you say?
So he was up for a Veterans Committee vote, I believe, in the 80s or 90s. Maybe even earlier, because Howie said it was 30 years ago, but it sounded like it was longer ago, because the story contained Roy Campanella and Ted Williams.
Yeah, it's a long time ago.
Yeah, those guys have been dead for a hot minute here. But the old rule was that to get in with the Veterans Committee vote, the voters had to be present. And Roy Campanella, a teammate of Gil Hodges, one of his closest personal friends, one of his major campaigners to getting in the Hall, was actually in the hospital and couldn't submit his vote live, even though he was the one pushing this, running the campaign basically for the whole year. And Ted Williams, who's chair of the committee, said the vote didn't count. And that's how Hodges missed the first time. He tried to get in with the Veterans Committee.
That's also insane, by the way. Why is the Hall of Fame...
Ted Williams, man, strict.
Yeah, I know. Oh my God. It's like, you gotta stick to the book. I just don't even understand why the Hall of Fame voting like that is just... The Veterans Committee? We're going to... Harold Baines got in from the Veterans Committee.
Jerry Reinsdorf is a friend of the committee.
But, I mean, glad for Gil Hodges, glad for the Hodges family. Obviously, yes. The guy has deserved it for years and years. And we were talking about, again, the vibes at the park were really good. We saw the Padres... Well, we started a little controversy with Padres Twitter, with our Twitters, because they're wearing LFGSD shirts with, like... That's a little bit of a mouthful. It doesn't really roll off the tongue like LFGM.
Yeah. No, it doesn't sound that good either. There's too many initials. Like, why use this many letters? What code are you trying to tell?
So as a good, internet journalist, as a good YouTuber, as a social media guy myself, I went to James. I said, I need to take a picture of this and post it because regardless, we're going to get people talking. It's going to get clicks. Don't really care what the backstory is.
God, we got so many replies. It was beautiful.
The San Diego Padres fans were furious. So basically we're
flying for 24 hours.
Yeah, what basically ended up happening is that I guess last year, Jorge Alfaro, or earlier in the year, right? He wasn't on the Padres last year, was he?
Was he?
I don't know.
I think he was.
Okay, so last year, I guess it was then. He hit a walk-off home run, and he kind of did the LF, GM thing, but he did it with San Diego. So that became their entire thing, and he was, I guess they had those shirts made, or someone in San Diego had them made.
He was in the Marlins all last year.
Okay, so then it was earlier this year.
Yeah.
But and that was like his term. So they're like, it has nothing to do with the Mets. And it was like, okay, but even if it doesn't, like,
we know where you got it from.
Yeah, we know where you got it from, and we got you, San Diego. You replied to Mets up Twitter. You have no reason to. That's prime bait right there. So little fist bump there.
Another fun thing before the game, Jet Williams has signed his contract, first round pick last Sunday, only a week ago. It feels like a million years ago.
It does.
First round pick from the Mets out of Texas, high school kid. He was at the ballpark. He was getting just absolutely swarmed by reporters. But we did spend a little bit of time with Jet, made a TikTok, got to walk around with him, shout out him and his agent Chris Rose. We had very nice time with Jed, a very charming and engaging young man, and very confident in his future.
You forget sometimes, like, just talking to him, you're like, oh yeah, you're like 18 years old. You're basically a child. So, like, seeing him, like, walk around and, like, it's not that he was, like, spaced out, but it was almost like, oh my God, my childhood dream just came true. I just signed a contract for millions of dollars with the New York Mets. Like, just taking it all in. And he was exhausted by the end of it all.
Yeah, he was, like, signing autographs. People were asking him for pictures. And then the other side of that coin, just complete juxtaposition. There were multiple security guards. We were walking around the tunnels trying to get spots to TikTok. I'm like, hey, where are you going? And I was like, it's the Mets first round pick.
It's Chet Williams. Do you not know? I mean, he's a really nice dude. Had some good conversations.
Nice time with him,
too. Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah.
I liked to get it. It was also funny because when he walked down to the field, of course, 18-year-old kid, he doesn't know who's important and who's not. And me and James are standing next to all the reporters and stuff, but we have our badges on. And he comes right up to us and gives us a handshake. Yep. Like, hey, how are you? Nice to meet you. It's like, well, I don't think you know who we are. Like, we're the podcast guys.
Yeah, he probably likes us now.
Oh, of course. I mean, Jeff follows all the Instagram, all the social medias, as you guys should, too, at Mets Up.
Posted us.
Yeah, so shout out to Jet. It's cool that he was there. We also got a really awesome interview with Chris Bassett that's going to come to you guys. I don't know when.
Soon.
Really awesome stuff. That was like last minute. We thought we were going to talk to Guillaume or somebody else, and Chris Bassett ended up being the guy, and he gave us some great sound bites.
He's a really good dude. He's funny as hell.
Yeah, he's funny.
And he's such a massive human being. You don't even realize like how big these guys are, especially the pitchers. So you're sitting down next to them, try and give him a handshake, and he just swallows you up.
Yeah, it's like his hands. You're like, I got little baby hands compared to what Chris Bassett. He's so long. He's got long arms. I feel like when you watch him pitch too, his arms is like, wow.
Basketball passed.
Yeah, basketball passed.
I mean, we've been pontificating on all our nonsense. We got to the park very early on Friday. We had a whole day before the game started. And then when the game did get started, the only thing that I think we're really going to talk about very much is Max Scherzer.
Yeah.
Max Scherzer is a great start. First game out of the All-Star break.
Well, we also forgot to mention that Daniel Vogelbach got traded to the Mets.
Oh, yeah, like literally moments before first pitch.
Vogelbach. It's not Vogelbach. Vogelbach. It's a bad habit I have to break. He's Daniel Vogelbach. Yeah, we were on the field. We were doing all that stuff, and you're like, Let's just trade for Daniel Vogelback. That was Daniel Vogelback for Colin Holdermoon, which I know a lot of people in the Mets world, Mets Twitter, whatever it be, were a little bit confused on the trade, just because Holdermoon has been really solid for this team and does have the years of control. But Vogelback also has, what, like 3 years of control and is
rookie in 2019.
Pretty good hitter. Pretty good, especially against the right-handed pitching.
And Holdermoon, I think people probably looked at him and were like, this is a right-handed reliever without top-end velocity and without an elite breaking ball. So you think theoretically you could probably replace that relatively easily, so you get a hitter where some you couldn't replace because the Mets have not been able to replace that
this year. And the Mets have definitely shown like a guy like Adonis Medina can be very valuable, or even Johan Lopez, who's coming in and done really well for this team. So
right-handed relievers
for a good power bat, definitely in. But now go talk about Scherzer after I stop you.
Max Scherzer was great. The vibes in the park were amazing. First came out of the All-Star break, he was ripping and rolling. What are you laughing about?
I read what you put in the notes.
Oh.
About get to it. Get through it.
Beginning of the game, the first two innings were electric. I think he struck out the first two batters of the game and had four through three innings, or through two innings. Mark goes to me, this feels like one of those games where he's going to take a no-hitter deep. I said, what the hell is wrong with you? Why would you say that? Literally, right after that third inning, two men on, fourth and a couple men on. And I believe the fifth inning is when he gave up the home run to freaking Eric Hosmer that had me just spinning in my seat. But more about the good stuff with Scherzer, because that's what we're going to talk about right now.
Yeah, we don't need to talk about the jinx.
Yeah, whatever. Eight strikeouts in six innings, 15 whiffs. 14 of those whiffs came on his fastball and slider, which is only kind of for 76% of his pitches, but he has been inching up using those two more as his most two effective pitches. Hilariously, just a savvy veteran move by Scherzer. He threw six curveballs in this game and got five called strikes.
Really?
Yeah, really cool.
Oh, that is cool.
Yeah.
I mean, he's really good. He changes if every start. He just does a little something different, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and you're like, oh, this is why the guy's been one of the best pitchers for the last 10 years.
Literally. And he passed Bob Gibson this game on the all-time strikeout list, which is pretty cool. One, because Bob Gibson's an all-time great pitcher, so seeing Max Scherzer pass him kind of puts into perspective how amazing this guy has been for as long. But also, Scherzer grew up in St. Louis, big Cardinal fan, him and his dad. And he said that Bob Gibson was like his all-time favorite pitcher to watch. One of his idols, his dad's favorite pitcher. And then afterwards, I think he was talking to Como, and he said he did book reports on Gibson left and right.
That feels right.
Yeah, which is hilarious. I mean, I did a couple book reports on baseball players growing up.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. What baseball players?
A few on Jackie.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, Jackie's another good guy. Yeah, definitely a historical figure.
100%.
So, I mean, good for Max passing one of his idols. And obviously, like you say, he's just been one of the best pitchers that we've seen in a very long time. It was just that one mistake to Hosmer. That was pretty much it.
Yeah, basically. Then Trent Grisham also with a homer late in this game. I'm only mentioning that because Trent Grisham has done something hilarious where he has exactly one home run per week for nine straight weeks.
That's insane.
Doesn't make any sense.
And he has like nine home runs, I think.
Those are not home runs. Yeah, he didn't hit any home runs. He has literally nine, one per week, every single week.
I mean, Darvish just dominated us. We couldn't hit. I don't really want to even talk about Darvish too much.
I'm going to do it because we did it last time that Darvish dominated us in San Diego. So I'm going to do the stats again because it's ridiculous. The guy like you, Darvish, who's had a very good career, great pitcher, but
great pitcher.
Up and down against the Mets, eight starts, 5-0, 52 and two-thirds innings, 2.5 ERA, which is shockingly high.
That is shockingly high.
I thought it was going to be like a 1.2. 0.7 whip, that makes sense.
Yeah.
29% strikeout rate.
Yeah, and I think even when he was swinging it, he had a couple hits. So thank goodness they didn't let you Darvish hit in this game either, because I'm sure he would have done something. It was just, you know, it was one of those games that stinks to lose because it was a winnable game.
And had a few late rallies against the Padres bullpen. We tried Taylor Rogers, who has been hot and cold over the last month and a half. We looked like we had a couple shots there. Hit the ball hard, too, which we didn't find it. The one other fun thing we did during this game, though, towards the end, we spent a very long time with someone you guys may know from Twitter as UK Mets. NYC?
NYC, and I think there might be a 15 in there.
Something like that. But Chap from across the pond.
Wow, that was horrible.
I'm not an accent guy.
No, definitely not.
I'm playing in here. Have some fun with it. But did a nice interview with him. That'll probably come out as a bonus episode, too, at some point. Check out his Twitter. He's just a British guy who fell in love with the Mets over the last 2 years. He was a good hang, too. He had pastrami for the first time in his life. You guys can watch that instant reaction either on our show or on the Mets TikTok or something the next few days. It was really, really freaking funny. Never had pastrami.
You also talk about, you were saying you don't realize how big these guys were.
Yeah.
Darren, who is the UK Mets fan, is just a absolutely massive human being.
Massive.
So it was nice to meet him. He got to experience his first ever, games at Citi Field. And that's got to be a cool feeling for someone who's a relatively new Mets fan to experience something like that. Because like we said, the vibes were there from the beginning.
Yeah, just didn't end up chills coming into the ballpark.
Which is cool, because that's something in my experience when I went to England and I went to see a Chelsea game out at Stamford Bridge. Same thing, I walked in, I was like, I got chills. I was like, this is different. So to hear someone from the UK, who their fans are, they're nuts. Like, Mets fans, we're crazy. English soccer fans are on a different level, honestly. Yeah. It's like almost like a cult in a sense.
I had that same chills moment when I went to a game at San Siro in Milan. And also, I think probably a couple Ohio State games, just like seeing the crowd.
Yeah.
That's a different athletic vibe. Whenever you go to this live event that you don't go to very often, you get that cool like rush of moment just being a sports fan,
which is really cool.
Yeah.
Now move on to game two here. Same thing as game one.
Kind of like the exact same game.
Real stink fest.
We had fun though.
Yeah, we had a great time. We had a good day. Again, this is the last weekend I have this apartment here in Queens, and there's a nice terrace that we have.
Beautiful terrace.
Was so clutch during COVID that we were able to basically all hang out outside together, socially distant.
Yeah. Helped us kind of create this friend group that we've had for years now in the city.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, and nice. It's nice. So we're celebrating that, having a good time, tailgating a little bit before the game as well.
Shout out Scuffy McGee,
Twitch streamer, if you guys know him from MLB The Show. You might. Check him out if you like MLB The Show. He's a good dude. But the game was rough.
No, but the one great thing about this game was Chris Bassitt was incredible. 7 innings, 11 strikeouts, 2 earned runs, 0 walks, 4 hits against the Padres offense that lit him up for 7 runs. A few months ago, and Mets fans thought he wasn't good for some reason because he had a 4.5 ERA over a 5-start sample. Turns out he's actually great. He's kind of been dominant literally every single start since that happened.
Yeah.
Even with the COVID break in between. 11 strikeouts, matched a career high. Recorded at least 1 strikeout with 5 different pitches, which
Damn.
Is the Bassitt special. I think he had either 4 or 5 perfect innings as well.
Well, that was when we were talking to him. Yeah. We talked about how is it using PitchCom with all those pitches, which you guys will hear about. But
funny.
It's what makes him so great is that he just does have all those weapons to use.
Yeah, he just throws them all. Big, deep tool bag, as we like to say on here. Dating back, there's a Johnny stat right here. Dating back to the start of 2021, only Darvish and DeGrom have a lower expecting batting average against their four-seam fastball than Bassitt. That was a mouthful.
You can read that like Tim Kirkshin next time. Only Chris Bassitt
have a lower expected batting average against the four-seam fastball than Chris Bassitt. He didn't even throw the four-seam fastball that much. But he also just had 10 whiffs with 11 strikeouts, which is one of the funniest stats I've seen this entire year.
Yeah.
But 13 called strikes individually on his sinker, just spotting it on the edges all night long.
And it's funny you mention that because the one pitch that he didn't get for a called strike, the next pitch right after that, Manny Machado hit the 2-run home run, and that was the difference in the game, which, you know, Bassitt should have got a punchy there. I think on second look by some different baseball savant Statcast things, it might have been a ball, but I'm taking the MLB Game Day feed as truth, as it always is. And we got screwed there, but again, the offense didn't show up.
Score more runs.
Like, you give up 2 runs to the Padres over a 9-inning game, the Mets should win. We were on the Twitter spaces, and I was like, when the Mets score 4 more runs,
it's like a 94% winning percentage.
They almost don't lose.
Yeah.
Like, it's insane. So,
well, this start from Bassitt set a Mets team record with 13 straight games allowing 2 runs or fewer by the starting pitchers.
And damn.
Over that exact span, the Mets starters have a 1.67 ERA, and that was before Carlos Carrasco gave up no earned runs for 5 innings on Sunday to extend this record 14 games. 95 strikeouts, only 17 walks. Mets starters also have the most strikeouts in all of baseball for the month of July.
The starting pitching has been really great, and we still don't even have Jacob DeGrom. It's crazy. But that's also
Max Scherzer for 6 weeks.
Yeah, we did get, like, what now, 4 starts of Scherzer? Is that his 4th?
Something like that.
Yeah, so, and that does make a huge difference because he's been just pretty awesome in every single one.
Awesome. Bassitt, too, and we've mentioned this a few times about Bassitt. I have specifically about his curveball, and he keeps throwing it more and more and more. Set another season high for his curveball usage rate. Third time in his last 5 starts, he says season high. I really like that pitch. It's a really pretty hook.
Yeah. On the offensive side of things, before to talk about the elephant in the room, Pete Alonso had a good day. He had 3 hits, which was nice to see Pete swing the bat well out of the All-Star break.
Yeah.
And also just got to mention Luke Voit, because Luke Voit is one of the – I mean, now we have Dan Vogel back, who's probably one of the funniest players on a baseball field as well. But Luke Voit is like
– another St. Louis guy, too.
Yeah. He went to Missouri State, Luke Voit. Mm-hmm. I know that for a fact, actually. And he's – I don't know how to explain it, but he's like almost a caricature.
He's like a bro.
Yeah, he's like a caricature of a bro who plays baseball, but he's like not a bro because he's cool.
He's like exactly, you know what he's like? This might be a little high level analogy here. He's like if like a Jersey Shore bro went out in Cape Cod.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
there?
I see that.
Where like he's like rocking, he's got the big chest, he's burly with the chest hair, but then I feel like he still tries to like keep it in a little bit more.
Keep it in a little bit more. And he's like he likes to have
shake his head, he didn't like that analogy.
He likes to have fun. He's not trying to fight people. Like
no, he might.
I wouldn't want to piss off Luke Voit. The dude is quite literally popping out of his jersey, as we can tell by the lack of buttons that he has on. How many buttons did he have off on this game? Because I know that was a big thing for John. Maybe he has that number for us if they actually got the official.
Also, we flashed on the board. Mike Janella had a funny line about it, too. I think it was over under 3.5 buttons left by the 7th inning.
Which, It's impressive.
It's a tight line.
It's honestly crazy that he doesn't just play with the jersey completely unbuttoned at this point.
It's kind of funny if he did do that.
You think baseball would let him?
No.
No?
100% no.
Yeah, strict with the uniform stuff.
Yeah, that's as much as he's going to get. But this game just couldn't hit. Mets didn't even have one hard hit ball after the sixth inning, which against a Padres bullpen, that's good, not great. You just got to hit the ball harder.
Okay, let's talk about the elephant in the room now. The thing that I think that everyone wants to hear. The Nito pinch hit, the Nito situation. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. I think we talk about process a lot, and I think that was a little bit of a confusing one, that with Jeff McNeil on the bench in the ninth inning with a tying run on third base, that they kept Tomas Nito in to hit when we do have a backup catcher in Pat Mazzica on the roster able to catch. This was the hot topic. I think this got a lot of Mets fans, ourselves included, after the game. We were a little bit like, we can't really understand the decision-making behind this. No, McNeil doesn't hit lefties as well as he does righties, but it's a process thing, right?
Yeah, just also the way that Buck described it, saying that Nito was in the flow of the game, where I'm like, I don't know about that.
Yeah,
I wish I had something better than that after that. But it was weird, especially now that we are going to second-guess it because it didn't work.
Yeah.
There was also the moment before that where Travis Jankowski looked like he could have scored. Who hit that bloop double?
JD.
JD hit the bloop double, yeah. So there was a chance. It would have been a bang-bang play. He would have needed the Padres to screw something up.
He would have needed Eric Hosmer to make a Lucas Duda throw. to have a chance. Because it really was, honestly,
that moment,
eerily similar to like the distance that there was between them.
It was such a shallow blooper that even Jankowski getting to where he did from first was a spectacle. Because the guy can really fly, but he was like, the cutoff came in from like 40 feet.
Yeah.
And then Hosmer was there like 100 feet from home. Like, you really would have needed something good to happen, which is possible.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, you got to make a guy make a play, but I don't know. With Hosmer in the Mets, he makes things happen. I don't know what happens when he comes to New York.
Hot. What the hell?
That's the worst. he's a rat.
Yes, he's the king of the list.
He's the king right
now.
Number
one rat.
Enough of game one and two where they lost. Let's talk about game three where the Mets win.
Yes.
Hey. Great way to end the series.
For like five innings, though, this felt like we're watching the same game over again for three straight days. Groundhog Day situation.
I was getting curmudgeon-y. I was doing a little bit of pacing, going like,
frustrated.
What's going on? Why aren't we hitting? I know Joe Musgrove's good, but I was having like an existential crisis.
Also so brutal waiting all day for this game after the two losses. Oh my God, just seven. You're like, oh, come on, get there. Let's play, please.
Like, I don't have a... So, in the past, I didn't like Sunday Night Baseball because of who was doing the game. I think this crew is significantly better than there have been in a long time. What is it? Carl Ravitch, Eduardo Perez, and David Cohn. Friend of the podcast.
Yeah, recurring guest.
Follower of James Schiano.
Yes.
So, I like the broadcast group. It's just like, man, these 7 o'clock Sunday night games, like, I truly love 1 o'clock Sunday baseball games.
1:30
now. My bad, those are... incredible.
I know, they're great.
7 o'clock game's a little bit of a slog sometimes.
Especially with ESPN, there's so many commercials. It's like a guaranteed 3.5 hour game. We're sitting here at 11:45 trying to record the podcast.
Yeah.
See, ESPN's got to think more about the podcast.
Yeah, think about the Mets the podcast.
Persecuted class.
Especially when we have another late night game going with the Yankees this week, too.
I got to be in my office every day this week, too.
Yeah, you have a real job.
It's a big week for James.
Yeah, you can't sleep in. Like, yours truly.
Yeah, I got to get up tomorrow at 8 and go to my office. But Carrasco did a very good job in this game, something he has found a way to do a lot of times this year, get into trouble, but then also get out of it. He had the bases loaded in the first and wiggled free. He got double plays in the third and the fourth. John, give me a double play stab. What was it? Carrasco's induced at least two double plays in three straight starts and has six total, so exactly two double plays in three straight starts, has six total in that span after inducing only seven in all of 2020 and 2021, 24 starts.
So I wonder what the reasoning is behind that.
Well, there's a big reason for this. Carlos Carrasco has rediscovered his sinker and actually has been throwing it significantly more over the last month.
Okay.
So maybe a cue from the Mets to go against Carrasco's home run issues, as well as the ball flying a little bit more as the weather gets hot, throw more sinkers, try and get more ground balls.
I mean, it's working.
Working enough, but like, it's also the point where now this game, you have five innings, two walks, one strikeout. He got yanked, I think, rightfully.
Yes.
We didn't really have that many pitches going around the lineup a third time. Also, all these men on base really drove his pitch count up. He was sitting at like 85 after the five innings, something like that.
Yeah, he had been laboring a bit in this game. Like, there weren't many easy innings, and he had that weird one too where it was like the two dribblers and the one that clanked off his glove because he just kind of fell into the baseball a little bit after he threw it. It was tough. It wasn't an easy day for Carrasco, but he gutted it out.
He did, and he threw that sinker, his four-seamer, changeup, and slider. They're all basically exactly 25% each.
Hmm.
So you do that, keep players off balance. You can find ways to get guys uncomfortable. You're not missing bets.
And we scored.
Yes,
we scored. Runs. Which was awesome. I mean, like you said, it felt like it was going to be the third day in a row, yeah. like Groundhog's Day.
People were getting angry in the park after that fifth inning where we had second and third, nobody out. People were starting to do things.
Yeah, which, I mean, the Mets scored two runs in the first 23 innings of the series, and then they drop a five spot in the sixth. Like,
thank God.
We needed that so badly.
After Hosmer gave the Padres the lead.
Yes.
And people were like, oh, like, my God.
Eric Hosmer, plus the Mets are losing, plus they haven't been scoring. This was like,
You're staring down the barrel of having zero leads in a three-game series with the Yankees coming to town.
Yeah, like, that's just...
That's not good.
That's the newspapers will run with that, yeah, run wild.
Oh, man.
But luckily, like we said, we had that big inning. Pete Alonso hit the big home run, yep. which was so that needed that so badly. Yeah. That was actually right when you arrived too. Things started turning around when you got back to the apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, like my tweet, a very expletive laden tweet of like, finally, we got some runs. It was nice. It was nice.
Yeah, it was nice, especially because like the Mets were getting guys on base, they were getting hits. This looked like it was going to be one of those awful games that you like just clench your fists. You're like, couldn't they win it? But they did. P had that one, and then we had a nice little rally after Musgrove came out of the game against Nick Martinez. That kind of got catalyzed by Ha-Seong Kim making a strange play. He's a good defender, a shortstop, yes. I think, to the eye. I don't know what the analytics say about it, but went behind the bag. Vogelbach, who, thank God this didn't happen because...
Vogelbach. We got to break the habit.
Vogelbach.
He feels like such a Bach, though.
Yeah, he seems like a Bach.
But he's a Bach.
You think he listens to Bach?
I would say Daniel Vogelbach has listened to, was it Sebastian Bach? Is that his name?
Possibly.
That feels about right. I would say he's listened to under one song of him. So would that be zero?
Bach doesn't have like songs. Like all these old guys have like the symphony. It's like an hour long.
Well, then
Beethoven's fourth.
I'll take under 10 minutes.
Yeah, easy.
Like that's like
hammer that under.
Elementary school, they force you to listen to it. But he never has chosen to listen to Bach.
No, also you talk about elementary school. Didn't he play high school ball with Nito and Lindor?
Yes, and this was also his debut, which we didn't even
believe. Yeah, Vogelbach's debut. Got a great ovation. And a walk and a big hit. Started this rally. But ball's behind second base. Vogelbach doesn't run the best. And Ha-Seong Kim had a very easy opportunity to just get the lead runner at second. Decided to throw it across, not across the diamond, but across half the diamond to first. Got Kanya. We didn't talk about that either.
Yeah.
What was saying Mark Kanya's name wrong?
Well.
Kinda.
He got interviewed during the game, and he was saying that,
funny
like.
Guy.
Yeah, a very, very good interview. I like when they talk to some of these guys that like have personality like that. Like, the stars are cool, obviously, always, but it's cool to find some of these other guys. And yeah. Kanya has definitely some personality, especially with the food stuff.
Stuff about McNeil was so funny.
Yeah, he was saying that he's a fourth-generation Portuguese descendant, which I had no clue. I had no clue he was Portuguese at all. If you gave me 100 guesses, I never would have guessed Portuguese.
He also said Jeff McNeil eats Lunchables.
Yes.
That's one of the funny things I've ever heard.
Yeah, that...
You can't have Lunchables when you have a kid. That's like, there's got to be legality issues there.
They asked him about who's the worst eater or who has the worst food taste on the team. And he cracked up immediately. And they're like, oh, like maybe you don't know how the guys eat yet because you've been with the team for less than a year. He's like, no, I have the answer. It's like it's not even debatable. It's Jeff McNeil. And they're like, why? He's like, well, you know, like he's a little picky. Like Jeff, you'll see hamburgers. That's what they'll eat for the, you know, pregame meal. They'll have hamburgers maybe for the day. And he goes, it's going to be a good day for Jeff. Like he's got a hamburger. What can he find wrong with this? And he goes, and Jeff will just be like, oh, no, I don't like the hamburgers. I don't like those today. He's like, I saw him eating, like you said, the Lunchable. He said he's eating Ritz crackers and salami before the game, which is just, I mean, like, shout to Jeff, friend of the podcast.
Yeah.
Saw him this weekend.
Said hi,
knew who we were.
Congratulated us.
Yeah, congratulated us. Very cool. Very nice guy. He'll be on here. He promised. We're going to get Jeff. I'm putting that out in the ether. Jeff said he'll be on here. That being said, I think we're going to have to ask him about his food stuff when he does come on. Because
Maybe Lunchable. We'll do a Mount Rushmore. We'll do a big three of Lunchables.
Oh, my God. Dude, Jeff, he's probably eaten a fair share of Lunchables.
Oh, yeah.
As someone who is a little bit of a picky eater myself, I respect it.
Yeah, Mark, just to put back the curtain, Mark took all of his food ideas, thoughts, and opinions as like a 10-year-old, and he stopped developing them.
To be fair, I've like had a vegetable or two recently.
There you go.
Like,
you hear that?
Like... When I have pot pie, I don't pick out the carrots and peas anymore.
That's psychotic behavior.
Well, yeah, I'm an adult man now.
Favorite fruit's an apple.
Apple's the best fruit.
That's the least imaginative thing I've ever heard in my
What's
life.
Your best? Just tell them what your favorite fruit is.
It's either probably a mango or a pineapple.
Okay, those are good. Those are really good.
Fantastic.
But I don't know. I feel like a good Granny Smith green apple, that's like nature's candy right there.
That is literally the most basic fruit in the world.
That's insane.
That's like, that is your favorite fruit when you haven't tried the other fruits yet.
Maybe. I don't know.
Again, I've tried three times talking about this play. Vogelbach was safe at second. Yes, yeah. Vogelbach was safe at second. Canada's out at first. And then we get the most incredible clip of the entire night. Luis Guillorme hits a blooper, falls in between Profar, Kim, and Machado. And Vogelbach is just chugging, rounding second, coming around third, just hoofing it home. Rough slide, but still made it safely. Are you checking sprint speed on?
Yeah, I want to see what his sprint speed is and see where he ranks, because he kind of runs a little bit like Babe Ruth. He's got the little tiny steps, and he is a bigger fella. So
right after this, though, Tomas Nido hit a laser, got some insurance, drove Guillorme in. Whoa, that's bad.
Vogelbach is out of 490 players, 482nd in sprint speed. So
I think they did say, though, on that play that he got around...
The 24 mark?
No, he got to, like, I think it was, like, seven per second they list this as. It's covering right there.
Okay,
Vogelbach also would go down longer. This is funny. It's the second slowest non-catcher in the entire league, only faster than Albert Pujols.
Oh, man.
Oh, and Cabrera, and Miguel Cabrera. Oh,
Not there to run.
No, a little bit slower than Jesus Aguilar.
He did bust it, though, on this play.
He did bust it. That's all you can ask for. And then Nido with the double. We got more insurance later, another Pete double, Lindor the hit. Good. Great. We needed that little explosion. Got a little dicey in the ninth inning. Joely walked a couple guys. My Joely narrative is falling apart here. He's had a bad month.
Yeah.
But Edwin is the best closer in baseball. He saved it and it looked great.
It was really... I say this every time with Edwin, but 2019 Edwin, sweating there. Yeah. 2022 Edwin, I literally... Me and you didn't feel nervous for a second. No, we're like, the game's over now.
We dug into the notes, honestly. Yeah.
I was like, let's get to work. And that wraps up the Padres series. The Mets made a couple moves.
Yeah.
Trading for Vogelbach and... Michael Perez, who's going to be a depth catcher, it appears. Two Pirates guys, weirdly enough.
Yeah, and two separate trades.
Yeah.
Bizarre.
I don't know. Michael Perez, I don't really have much of a scouting report on that guy.
His stats on Savant don't look that good, like pop time and framing, but Fangraphs has given him a positive defensive rating for each of the last 2 years. I think he's just basically going to be a different version of Nido.
Okay. Yeah, and I think he's a lefty.
Oh, really?
I think he swings left-handed.
Okay, that's pretty cool. So. I don't think he... hits the ball very well, but
we'll see. That was with the Pirates.
Oh yeah, get some energy into these guys.
Yeah, get them on a winning team. Maybe things should turn around for Michael Perez at the plate. But we'll see how that goes. We still have Mazika up right now, and this kind of brings up the big conversation that everyone has been dying for us to talk about in depth. Congratulations, guys, you're getting it. It's trade deadline talk time because the trade deadline is what, just over a week away. It's
nine
now
days, I believe.
Yeah, August 2nd.
Bizarre.
Which is just awful, especially because we're traveling that day.
I know. I think we're doing an event with... should I just say it?
Yeah, go with it.
We're doing an event with Jolly Olive with Amtrak, going to a game in D.C. So it's going to be cool. We're going to be on the Amtrak train during the trade deadline. So we're going to try and live stream from an Amtrak train.
Which is going to be absolute chaos. But hey, that's trade deadline's chaos. I would want to know other way. Well, actually, I would. I'd prefer to be here in front of my computer doing it. Totally. But
we had a great time with the deadline stream last year. I picked up like hundreds of followers.
Yeah, well, it was a ton of fun. Yes. And when the Javi Baez trade, the deadline's fun. That's why I know you guys want us to talk about it. So we went through and listed a ton of players.
A lot of guys.
We're going to give you a crash course.
Yes.
We have maybe 10 to 15-ish players.
I think we have more.
Well,
yeah.
Some more in-depth than others.
Yeah, of course.
A couple names that we want to mention that we don't think we'll trade for. So,
yeah, we still have to mention them.
You're the reliever guy. You're the pitcher. I'm going to let you start talking about a couple of these guys first.
Absolutely. But first and foremost, I do want to say I think it'd be cool if the Mets were involved in the big starters that might be moved between Luis Castillo, Tyler Molly, Frankie Montas. It's not that, like, sure, the Mets right now might have too many starting pitchers, but I've literally never, ever heard of one that's a bad thing.
Dodgers always have, like, 10, so.
Yeah, Dodgers go into the year with the most pitching every single year, and they always still wind up with, like, just 5 by the time the playoffs come around. And those three guys are all difference makers in their own way. Castillo, the way he's adjusted his four-seam fastball this year, added more ride on it. He just looks like one of the best versions of himself we've ever seen. Tyler Molly's ERA, not in Great American Ballpark, is 2. Guy's great. He's a fly ball pitcher. Gets a lot of swings and misses with a slider. He'd just fit like a glove into Citi Field.
Yeah.
And Frankie Montas, I don't think, gets the credit he deserves as a marquee pitcher in baseball because he pitches for the Oakland Athletics. Kind of similar to how you've seen Chris Bassett this year. But Montas has like an upper 90s gas with a disgusting splitter. He's so good. I really like all three of those guys. And think all of them probably worth the premium in the trade. But for this conversation, I'm going to talk to you guys about relievers because the Mets bullpen has had been up and down this year, better than average overall.
Yeah.
One of the best strikeout rates of any bullpen in baseball. A lot of that's because of Edwin Diaz and Adam Ottavino, of course. But definitely can't hurt to get another trustworthy high-leverage guy out here, especially a lefty. And
I'm going
to start out with two lefties who I think should be on the Mets' radar and who are having pretty good years. First one being Joe Mantiply, all-star from the Arizona Diamondbacks. I do think that he will be pretty expensive because he has a couple years left of control. I think 4 years of team control on him. So he's going to be a tough get, but I'm sure Diamondbacks are going to listen because he's like a 32-year-old who throws 90 miles an hour. So you probably just got to trade him while it's hot.
When you're talking about a rebuild, he's not going to be a core piece that you're like, we got to keep Joe Mantiply.
No, because a guy like Joe Mantiply, I've talked about this a lot, but these relievers who don't throw that hard, who kind of rely on soft contact, it's easy for them to go up and down. But Mantiply has made an absolute, like, really legit change that's made him so good this year. He switched from a four-seam fastball to a sinker over the last 2 years, developed that pitch. He only throws 90, so why am I trying to get swings and miss with the pitch? Let me just get some ground balls. Sinker's elite. He has plus movement vertically, plus movement horizontally. And with that pitch, he just pounds the zone, crafty lefty. 1% walk rate, best in all of baseball.
Hmm.
No free pass. You guys don't want to see reliever free passes? That's Mantiply. And he's also very hard to square up.
It's a little loopy.
Yeah, a little loopy. Only giving up two barrels on the whole year.
That's really impressive.
Exactly. Listen, he's one of the better kept secrets in bullpens right now, and he, I think, is very good and would be a good addition to this pen.
Yep, and then the other lefty is going to be Andrew Chafin, who everybody knew about this offseason, someone that a lot of Mets fans wanted. He's a little expensive, which is kind of strange, kind of goes against what we say about relievers.
But also kind of works in the Mets' favor because I think less teams will be trying to trade for him because he's going to be due probably another two-ish million this year, and he has a player option for $6.5 million next year. So if he does pitch well, he'll probably just opt out.
Yeah.
And you could just not pay him.
That's true.
It was a lefty rental. Or if he does pitch well, $6.5 million is not the end of the world for a one-year deal.
Yeah, really, at the end of the day.
And Chafin, I was a little bit low on him in the offseason because he was another one of these like sinker changeup guys from the lefty like sidearm. He was good, but I just didn't know how year-over-year consistent the skill set was going to be. But I talked about how his slider was good, and I wish he would throw it more. He's been throwing a lot more this year.
Yeah.
It's become one of the nastiest pitches in baseball, 60% whiffs on the same level as where Edwin and David Peterson have theirs. That's some of the most whiff sliders in baseball. I think he'd be a good target.
I'm going to throw out another lefty, too, because this is someone that I personally like, and I think it would be a fun little guy to bring in here. Well, he's not little. He's very big. He's a large human being. He played basketball at the University of St. John's. That would be Amir Garrett, who's dominant against lefties. Mm-hmm. He throws gas. He has a devastating slider. He just walks guys a little bit. That's kind of his problem right now is his control. But again, Jeremy Hefner, sprinkle that. Amir Garrett's dying to play on a team that's good. He's gone from the Reds to the Royals. I mean, that's baseball hell.
You could take a pitcher out of Kansas City and probably get like 20% more production out of them.
Yeah, without
I don't know what they're telling those guys over there.
Paper and pen.
Yeah, paper and pen organization. Except for the bats. They found out the bats. Now we're going to run through a couple of righties who are pretty interesting. Number one target, I think a lot of people feel this way, but right now Jorge Lopez has been a breakout star here in Baltimore. Shifting from the rotation to the bullpen, as a 29-year-old. He's going to cost a lot because he's like an elite closer right now. Like he's statistically one of the better closers in all of baseball. The stuff is incredible. Sinker that sits 98-99 with good movement. Slider, changeup, and curveball, bringing that starter's repertoire into the bullpen, similar to Raisel Iglesias. He has two more years of control, too, but he would give the Mets probably the best 1-2 punch of any bullpen in baseball right now.
Yeah, it'd be pretty filthy.
Jorge Lopez giving the ball to Edwin Diaz would be kind of insane.
He's been absolutely locked down. And then some guys from Detroit, because we mentioned Andrew Chafin. Yeah. Again, we're talking about all the bad teams that we're trying to pick up guys from, which sounds weird because it's like, we want players from teams that aren't good. But
that's why they're trading relievers.
Exactly, that's why they're trading them. Michael Fulmer, former Met. You guys remember him from the Yoenis Cespedes trade, right?
Think about how long ago that trade feels. And right now, Michael Fulmer is in the rental stage of his reliever life cycle.
Yeah, so have you ever had a question about whether that trade was worth it or not?
Yes.
Yes. He's been pretty good. He's just like a solid reliever.
He is. Fulmer was a guy who was always just like had fine stuff and then he didn't really walk anybody. He got some strikeouts around league average and got the job done. This year, that's changed a lot. He has by far the worst walk rate of his career. It's over 10%. I think it's around 12.
Yeah.
Which is a big change for him. But the big reason for that is because someone just told him, your slider is your best pitch and you should throw it as much as possible. The last 3 years, Michael Fulmer's slider usage rate has gone from 23% to 40%, and now this year, 65%.
Yeah, it's absolutely gross.
The pitch is disgusting. It's great. It throws almost every time. You get a little bit more command on that pitch because command isn't great, but it looks really good. Great pitch movement on it. He could be a guy who's a legitimate weapon. But even with that, without it, the floor is a guy who is someone who is good but a little bit wild, and he's a for rentals. You can get him very cheaply.
That last Tiger guy I want to mention is Joe Jimenez. Shout out my boy Torque Tank on Twitter, who's a big Tigers fan, who's been preaching the word of Joe Jimenez to me for 4 or 5 years now, as long as I've known him. He's had a really, really good year. He's been an all-star before, so he's shown the ability to be a really good top-end reliever in baseball. He throws gas. He's been very effective, cut down the walks. He's a fun guy, too.
And he has another year of control next year, so he'll be a fun guy to get. Another guy I've been talking about a lot is David Robertson. Fan favorite, just because he's been around for a while. Former Yankee. He's a guy who has that, you know, that closer's mentality.
The pedigree.
Playoff medal. We've seen him do it before. And he's come back from a slew of injuries. Stuff's right there.
The cutter.
Fastball has, cutter his life. Curveball looks good again. Where's the fun Sox?
Yeah.
Cubs are going to dump him. I think he's also a rental.
But yes, he is.
He is a closer, and the guy who's kind of being regarded as one of the better relievers available, I think he will still cost a relatively expensive amount. So I don't know if he's a guy I want to trade for, but I do trust his skill 100%.
Yeah. Daniel Bard, another reliever.
Really good.
Is he a rental?
He is a rental.
Okay, yeah. So Daniel Bard has the cool story of he was out of baseball for like 5, 6, 7 years, however long it was, and then went to the Rockies, which is historically the worst place to ever pitch. He's been great ever since going to Colorado. I don't think it's anything to do with their team, you know, development.
I don't know if it is either, but this year he also made a big adjustment, switching from a four-seam fastball to a sinker, and the pitch is like unhittable or just gets beaten to the ground, which is kind of the best way to pitch.
And he's still getting strikeouts.
Oh, yeah, 100%, because his slider is disgusting, and he still sits 97 miles an hour. He'd be awesome. And then I want to talk about David Bednar, because he's the best reliever who could be available, but I don't think that's happening.
No.
The Pirates are like shockingly close to competition.
Yeah.
So I think by next year, they want to see if they can scrounge up a playoff spot. I don't think they would trade their elite young closer for that opportunity.
He's got like 5 years of control, too.
This is his third year in the league.
He's got a long time, I think.
2021, 2022. I think he hits ARB this year.
Okay, gotcha.
He did debut for the Padres that 1 year before the trade.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. That's true.
And that's where he learned that splitter, I believe, from Kirby.
Kirby Yates. Yes. Matt Bush is another name. Jose Leclerc. Yeah. Scott Barlow. I mean, the list goes on and on.
Barlow's the best guy from that list. He would cost a lot because he's 2 years of control, quality closer, and he's one of the few relievers available with above average stuff in command. Bush, former top pick, was out of the league, came back, great reliever, throws really hard. 2 years of control. Jose Leclerc throws gas, but he doesn't know where it's going.
Yeah.
These are all guys. These are the types of guys, though. This list of about 10 or so relievers. Just look at these other teams. See who has 3 years. See who's already in arbitration. That's who can be traded for.
Definitely. And then let's talk about the fun part.
Yeah.
The bats. Because obviously I feel like that's probably the number one thing everybody wants in Mets world.
A lot of people talking about the bullpen, too.
For sure. But yeah. I think the bat's the big one. Josh Bell, I feel like, is the hot name right now.
Oh, yeah.
And I think there's definitely some legs on this. I think that Josh Bell makes a lot of sense with this team.
Especially with the rumored package the Mets would have to be giving up. I think that's a smash. The only concern is that you get a guy, Josh Bell, and you have Vogelbach, and you'll probably still have J.D. Davis, and you still have Pete Alonso. So that's four guys who should really only be playing first base on one roster is not exactly where I want to be.
Yeah, it's a little bit tough, but he's absolutely hit. He can hit. The dude absolutely mashes. He'd be great.
Switch hitter too.
Bat to add to this. He could play the corner outfield. He theoretically could.
It's possible.
Yeah. So
honestly, you almost have to kind of try it.
He'll be a rental as well.
Yes, and he's a good bat. Otherwise, another good bat. A little bit older. Evan Longoria, last few years had a great barrel rate out in San Fran. We still don't know where they are standing with competition or not. Them getting swept by the Dodgers for 4 games.
It's also huge because Carlos Rodon's probably going to get traded too.
Yeah, which is freaking nuts.
I'd love to get Carlos Rodon.
Yeah, that's a good one. Put him on top of the list too, along with Montes and Castillo and Molly. And then also Wilmer Flores from that team.
Would fit well.
Yeah, would fit well. And the Mets kind of do need a guy to go opposite of Vogelbach here who can be a little bit multidimensional. Buster only mentioned that during the broadcast tonight. That's kind of the player they're looking at. Other guys who fit that mold are Brandon Drury, who we know very good and well. He's having a crazy year in Cincinnati. He should have been an all-star. He's like 35% better than league average.
Yeah.
If he came back to the Mets, I'm sure we'd see like 2021 Brandon Drury, who was like 10% better than league average. But he can't play third. He can't play second in the pinch. He can't play corner outfield in the pinch.
And he plays first.
He's the kind of guy who becomes like a late-inning chess piece, who will probably get a lot of DH reps. And if not, you'll see him at the end of the game. Donovan Solano, similar, also in the Reds. Just like a level worse than Drury. Does a little second, does a little third, can do a lot of outfields. Always got barrel on the ball, though.
Yeah, always Solano barrels.
Always gets barrel on the ball.
And plays everywhere. Same thing.
And the last guy, this kind of weird multidimensional guy that we thought about that hasn't been mentioned at all, oddly, is Whit Merrifield from the Royals.
Which it seems like the Royals probably just won't ever trade him. Because
he's free.
He had so much value in the past where they could have gotten like a serious haul for him a few years ago. And they didn't, because his contract, like you said, is just straight up free. He makes like under $10 million a year.
It's like 7 or 8.
Yeah, he's nuts. Former Gamecock as well. Would love to get him here. He plays second. He can play third. He plays all the outfield positions.
Well,
the defensive positioning and the versatility fits exactly what the Mets need badly. Definitely. It's just
the only question is his offensive profile is not what the Mets need. The Mets don't need another guy who only hits ground balls and softly hit balls to add to this roster. Like, that's just... Like, maybe if he's not that expensive, but I still feel like the Royals are going to cling to him tight, and you're going to have to give up a real prospect to get him.
They'd probably want Ronnie.
I don't think I could stomach giving up a prospect with actual pedigree for a guy who hits the ball 92 miles an hour.
No, completely. I think for the right package, sure. Yeah. You want something good?
Like,
no.
Maybe if we can get Scott Barlow and Whit Merrifield for Ronnie, that would do in a second.
Sure, yeah, I'd consider Ronnie that a lot more.
And, like, another decent prospect, because Barlow is 2 years of control, and he's a very good reliever. He, again, would probably give the Mets, like, one of the best back end, 8-9 punches in the whole league.
We can talk about Hunter Dozier, too, is another guy from the Royals that we mentioned.
Give us all of them.
Give us all the Royals. They have some fun players. Yeah. I know Benintendi is a name that's being thrown around a bit, too. I'm not particularly sold on Benintendi fitting into this team. It just doesn't really make sense.
Well, just as a single pure outfielder, then you get into the conversation of who's this person taking playing time away from?
Yeah.
Unless you just get more days where you're either Jeff McNeil stays on the infield more consistently, and then you get more of a platoon between Escobar, Guillorme at third, and this guy gets more DH reps, mixing in with Vogel back too. But Dozier's a guy who he always has barreled the ball better than league average. He's league average about play discipline. It's been very much better than that in the past. He's a big dude. He's only 30 years old.
Good athlete.
He's a good athlete. He's a guy who I think could come, and you could pay less for Hunter Dozier than you're paying for a lot of these other guys we're talking about and get equal or more production.
He's a guy who feels like he could just like randomly have a weird little pop off, like a hot month.
Some years like that in the past. Just pulling up his stats right now. I think 2019 doesn't really count, of course.
Yeah, but fake balls.
26 homers.
Yeah,
280 average, a 350 on base.
It's pretty good.
If you peel that back and he gives you 10 homers over the last 70 games with a 250 average,
sign us up.
A lock.
Sign us up. And then I feel like some of the bigger names, especially in terms of the bats, are going to be Trey Mancini and JD Martinez.
Yes.
Both of whom different reports have been put out by different guys that the Mets are very active in looking at JD and Trey Mancini.
Well, JD is definitely the best bat on this list.
Definitely.
If you want the best hitter possible, it's JD Martinez. It's still just the Red Sox are in that weird spot where we don't know if they're going to sell or not. I don't even know if they fully know either.
Getting the doors beat off them by the Blue Jays definitely helps.
they've been outscored by 54 runs in the last five games.
They've gone up like 68, right?
Yeah, a lot of that came from a 27-run barrage by the Blue Jays on Friday. But they're in a weird spot. They also have some relievers that I think the Mets would be intrigued by as well.
Yeah.
As well as my favorite depth starting pitcher on earth, Rich Hill. We could use him.
No, I think Rich Hill's hurt. I think he's out for the year.
No,
yeah,
really?
I think Rich Hill's got. I don't think he's going to pitch again for the Red Sox this season.
Poor enough for Rich.
Yeah, sorry, Rich. But those are the big names with the bats. You also have the Wilson Contreras conversation because the Mets with the catching and the lack of offense, it's a possibility. But it just Wilson doesn't make that much sense in my head. If you're going to trade all these guys, I feel like you got to either get someone with control or someone at a position relatively more
easy.
Easier. That will make more of an impact.
Is there any precedent to like a big deadline catcher deal happening in the past? I remember Lucroy was, and he got disappointed.
He stunk. Yeah, he was really bad. I think it's just. Otherwise, I think it's like really, really hard for one.
Piazza.
Yeah, Piazza's the one. But even he struggled at the beginning. So like, I think it's really hard to come into a new team, learn the pitching staff, and then also be a really important bat.
Bassett talked to us about that the other day where he was kind of, I don't want to give away too much in the interview, but he's like, it's hard when you don't know these guys to try and build up years worth of chemistry, and he said like a month.
Yeah.
You're only going to have a week with Contreras, and Contreras being the big bat he has, he's going to be catching basically every single day if you do theoretically acquire him.
He could also just DH.
He could, but then you're DHing him. Well, I just acquired DH for cheaper then.
Yeah, true.
Yeah,
no, completely. Well, I think that was the whole conversation of like, it's just going to cost a lot, so why him?
Yeah, because also, like, if this Michael Perez trade also makes me think they're not going to go after another catcher because he's becoming this organizational depth, the third string catcher, because it seems like just he's probably a little better receiver than Nido, but I thought Yan Gomes would be a good fit for that as well.
Yeah.
A friend of Scherzer
from
back in the Washington days, but that doesn't look like it's going to happen either.
No, but, I mean, I think that's – is there any other names we can think of?
I mean, as far as bats, I mean, like, the Nationals are just going to get rid of people. Kyle Finnegan's a fun reliever who throws really hard. He could be cool. I'm sure. I mean, who else? Even like Nelson Cruz, I guess people want to see.
There's always one surprise. There's always one surprise name every year, every deadline that gets moved.
The White Sox are the interesting team in that regard because they have a lot of pieces there. But I just don't think they'll quit trying right now. They're not that far off a wild card spot.
Sherry Reinsdorf.
Yeah, like they're 7 games behind the Twins, 5 games behind the Twins, something like that.
You think he hired Tony La Russa to trade off the players that Tony La Russa wanted? Come on.
Oh, man. But otherwise, like, any bat in the Royals, I guess. Not that many interesting ones, though.
No.
We lost out on Haniger because now the Mariners are really good, which stinks. most of the Angels, I guess, but who are you training for from that team?
Shohei Ohtani.
There you go. I'll trade for Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, Shohei Ohtani. What do they want? Juan Soto? I hope we forget Juan Soto.
I mean, we know that, but it seems like now it makes a logical sense where it seems like they don't want to trade him in the division.
Yeah.
It seems like it's moving in that direction. All the Yankee fans freaked out today because Yason Dominguez, Jason. I'd say Yason.
It's Jason.
It is Jason.
Yeah, very much Jason.
The J-A-S-S-O-N.
Jason.
I tried to play it up a little bit. Yeah, Jason Dominguez and Trey Sweeney both got pulled off the high A field. So people are like, what's going on?
I think Trey Sweeney was in the midst of getting a cycle as well, in the game. So it's weird timing. That being said, what a perfect segue to go right into our series preview, with the New York Yankees. First meeting of the year, the Subway Series. It is the baseball event of the year during the regular season, no doubt.
It's a premier New York City social event.
Yeah, it's going to be popping at Citi Field. I don't say that often.
No. I can't remember ever there's been this much buzz for a Subway Series without either team really playing that well either.
No, the Yankees are not as hot as they have been. Neither and the Mets, obviously, I mean, hey, maybe that Pete Alonso wakes everything up. It did feel like that was almost like a big pressure had been taken off everyone's shoulders.
And
like,
everyone hit after that.
Yeah.
The RBIs from Nido and Guillorme, like the lines kept moving really well after that.
Which was nice.
Yeah, you start rambling. I got to look at the pitching matchups. I believe actually going into today, both teams were TBD and TBA. They had different listings. I remember Wayne was talking about it.
Well, Scherzer is pitching one of the games. They said that on Sunday Night Baseball.
They said that for
that
sure?
Scherzer is going to pitch maybe Wednesday? Well,
Wednesday's his fifth day.
Yeah, so it'd be Wednesday then.
So then I guess we'll probably see Taiwan on Tuesday then.
Yeah, makes sense.
Also, because Peterson came out of the bullpen briefly, gave up a run. I might have jinxed that one a little bit. But yeah, came out of the bullpen, so it looks like he is going to be a reliever at least for the next week. So
yeah.
good time to try that out.
And I think all we know is that we miss Cole, right?
Yes, we do miss Cole.
Which, I mean, he hasn't pitched well in big games anyway, so it might have been a good thing. The guy's got no clutch bones in his body whatsoever. Like, but
all the Yankee pitchers are good now.
Yeah, I mean, the team's good. The team is really good. You talked about, like, you don't remember the hype like this in a while. When's the last time that both the Mets and Yankees were in first place going into a Subway Series?
First place?
Yeah, it's got to be quite some time, right?
I mean, I remember 2015, there was some hype, but wasn't that one of the years the Yankees were kind of selling?
Their selling is still being like 10 games above 500.
But they weren't rocking and rolling like we see them now.
I think they ended up having a pretty good year, but
2015?
I remember
a couple of those years they were sellers at the deadline, people freaking out. Well, I mean, no, 2016 was when they were sellers at the deadline, so they got Glaber for Chapman. Right.
But they've been really good this year.
Oh, actually do have pitchers on here now.
Oh, we have pitchers now?
So if this is true, which this would be kind of cool, we have Tuesday night on TBS, interesting, Taiwan Walker versus Jordan Montgomery.
Who, Montgomery?
Montgomery's really good, but
lefty with a curveball, damn it.
But also, like, he's doing the DeGrom thing with the Yankees where they have trouble scoring when he's on the mound.
Perfect.
I tried to word that very carefully.
Yes, I like that.
Yes.
Good.
And then Wednesday, I guess I think probably going to be both of these games. Wednesday, this is almost too good that I can't even believe it. Scherzer versus Domingo Herman.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sign me up.
Yes.
That's the kind of matchup that I like to see in our favor. That being said, the Yankees offense is just unbelievably good too.
Yeah, I mean, unbelievably good might be a stretch. I think there's some dead spots in that lineup now that some people get angry with. Especially, I mean, maybe just talking to too many Yankee fans.
Yeah, I think so.
Who have too close a view of this.
Like, you're talking Joey Gallo. This is who I'm assuming. But
also, Donaldson's been very hot and cold.
Matt Carpenter's Barry Bonds.
I don't want to talk about Matt Carpenter.
The guy literally doesn't get out. It's unbelievable.
I spent last weekend in New Jersey. Mark met my uncle, who's very old. He listens to this. I'm not gonna say Lou's very old. Uncle Lou's seasoned. He's a real Mets historian. So Mark actually finally met him and saw what he was like in person. He was talking about how mad Matt Carpenter makes him for like 45 minutes.
He was irate.
Just being good. What do you mean with this guy? Where'd they get him from? Huh? He's on his couch.
I mean, he's playing unbelievable. Like,
yeah, he's incredible.
He still has like a 1400 OPS, and he's now had like a couple 150 at bats probably for the Yankees.
With team stats,
just unbelievable how much they have. Aaron Judge is one of the five best players in the league this year. I mean,
clearly. His 37th home run Sunday. He's like on pace with Roger Maris for like breaking the American League home run record. He's only five home runs behind where Barry Bonds was in 2001 on his way to 70-something.
Oh, my God.
At the same amount of games played, Bonds is at 42 and Judge is at 37.
That's kind of crazy. Yeah. Barry Bonds at 72.
Yep.
That's a lot of home runs.
This Yankee team is very anti-Mets, where they just have like the second highest barrel rate in baseball and the third highest hard hit rate. So they also strike out a lot, but when they make contact, they really make contact.
Really hit.
The exact opposite of the Mets.
Except Isaiah Kiner-Falefa.
But it kind of seems like they might have gotten him for that like exact reason, as being a guy with contact.
And he plays good defense at shortstop.
I don't think he's played that good defense this year.
I think he's had bad throws.
I've seen a couple clank jobs.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like, you're watching a little more Yankees than me.
I watch everybody. Yeah. I mean, I love this Yankee. Well, first of all, I made a lot of preseason bets on this Yankee team because I knew that they were going to be really sick. This bullpen's incredible. I told you in like the middle of April that Michael King broke his elbow the other day. He's going to miss the rest of the year. He was one of the best relievers in baseball. And you told me to shut my mouth.
I did tell you to shut your mouth.
He's like one of the best relievers in baseball. I was dead on about that.
So Edwin
Diaz. I wrote an article on Pitcher List in the offseason that Clay Holmes is one of the best relievers in baseball. He has become one of the best relievers in baseball. Also, shout out to Evan Phillips on that blog. Evan Phillips came out of nowhere, and he's nasty on the Dodgers. So
he is nasty.
Go back and look through that. I wrote up like five relievers who have all become great, basically, except for Anthony Gose. I thought it was really going to hit one, but he's still fun.
Yeah.
But this Yankee team just throws a lot of stuff at you. The bullpen's great. It does take a hit without King, but Clay Holmes is insane. Who else is out there?
In their bullpen?
Yeah.
I'm pulling up stuff. Jonathan Loaisiga, he's back now.
He's actually
now.
Not very good this year.
Okay.
But I think he still has the great.
They got Ronnie Baseball, Ron Marinaccio came back.
We're going to see the return of Miguel Castro to Citi Field, which will be kind of funny. Albert Abreu throws hard, I know. Lucas Lucchi, he's fine.
He's a crafty lefty.
Yeah, Clark Schmidt is a guy who, like, it's going to be really good forever.
Gamecocks.
Yeah. Really? He's Gamecock too?
Another Gamecock, yeah.
Nice. But he's just become a good reliever as they're trying to like get him ready to be a starter in the future. This team just has so many things to throw at you. Jose Trevino, they turned him to an all-star.
Yeah, which is unbelievable.
Yankee thing in the freaking world. Oh, it's so annoying. Glaber's awesome. DJ LeMahieu has been great again.
Like, they're a good team.
Yeah.
They're the best team in baseball right now on paper, I think. You think the Dodgers are better than them
now? I think significantly.
Interesting. What's your reasoning behind that?
I think they have a better lineup, and I think they... I don't know. I see them as being a better matchup to the other teams in the National League better than the Yankees are.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah.
And also, I'm saying that because the Dodgers are blazing hot right now. The Yankees are kind of regressing the mean a little bit, but I take that. I think the Dodgers have lost like 7 of their last 34 games.
Yeah, they're like just casually almost 30 games, about 500 now.
Yeah, like the Dodgers top three in the lineup. Like, the Yankees don't have a top three like that. The Yankees top three is still very good, but it's not.
And no Stanton, right, this series because he's hurt?
Oh, yeah.
So that's nice that we get to not see. Cool. And, of course, we remember the last time the Mets and the Yankees played. Francisco Lindor, 3-run home run game, and there was some animosity there. There were some words exchanged.
Stanton.
This game, I think, might get a little bit chippy at points, where there's going to be a little bit of talk.
I think now the Yankees are starting to realize that the Mets are kind of increasing their foothold in New York City. The Mets are becoming trendier. The Mets are becoming cooler. Mets are spending more money than the Yankees. Like, this is a new world order, and this is a chance for these two teams to kind of prove what they're worth in New York.
Really duke it out.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
So that being said, of course, we're going to bring in Johnny Stats here, John the producer, to talk about estimates, because as you guys know, we have our running game on the podcast where we have to guess things. And the loser,
Sorry, boy's frozen.
The loser is going to have to wear a tuxedo to opening day on 2023. So I believe, I mean, maybe John can give us the update here, but I'm pretty sure I lost the last one.
I think you did too.
You're right, Mark. You definitely dropped this second one. So that drops you to 0-2 so far.
Right.
You know, it's getting late early. I guess that's appropriate. Yogi Berra met. Incredible segue. Before we get into this upcoming estimate, I just want to get your guys' takes. Favorite Subway Series moment of all time? Let me get one from each of you.
You go first.
Mine's definitely, I think we talked about this a few episodes ago, but one of my favorite games I've ever been to, the David Wright walk-off double off of Mariano Rivera, I believe in 2006. Yeah, game Jeremy Gonzalez started. The Mets were down early in that game, and it came all the way back, and David Wright got the big hit off Mariano Rivera. I feel like that kind of was a big moment for Wright to like put his stamp on being one of the better players in baseball. Being there was very cool.
When I think of Mets-Yankees, I think of there's like three moments. But I'm going to pick my favorite one because it's so crazy. But how about when Dae-Sung Koo?
Yeah.
What did he hit? He hit a triple right off of Randy Johnson.
Yeah, in Shea Stadium.
In Shea Stadium, which, like, that's unbelievable. That's something I'll never forget. But, I mean, like, Piazza owning the Yankees is awesome. So anytime Mike Piazza played the Yankees, he did well.
Jacob DeGrom, first career start.
Yep, Jacob DeGrom, first career start. And I was also going to talk about, what was it, the 8 RBI, the Grand Slam by Carlos Delgado.
Yeah.
When they played at Yankee Stadium. So the Mets have had some really good moments against the Yankees, especially in our lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we lost the World Series. That's not a cool one. But,
no, bad one.
I mean, there's been a lot good. And we saw Lindor hit 3 home runs, too, last year.
And
which
we
was
saw the Mets really handle the Yankees in Yankees Stadium.
Yeah.
Remember that? What happened?
That was the
Jose Peraza off of Chapman moment.
Yes, Jose Peraza off of Chapman. And then didn't Ahmed Rosario hit a walk-off in Yankee Stadium?
Yes, with no fans.
Yes, with no fans. And I remember being like, the Mets get to celebrate a walk-off on Yankee Stadium field. Just elite Twitter bait. What about you, John? What's your favorite?
Well, I'm a little bit older than you guys. The 99 game, the Matt Franco walk-off hit, that was a classic, back and forth. The Yankee fans, I happened to be at that game. And I'll never forget I don't want to use the word obnoxious. I feel like it's not nice, you know, like, you know, we want to be all friends here, but they were very obnoxious that day. Filing out of Shea Stadium, and the jubilation was incredible. Also, low-key, not a great Mets team in 2004, but the Mets swept the Yankees at Shea Stadium in 04. Richard Hidalgo went on a heater. He actually has the Mets record for most consecutive games with a home run. And it came in that span. Ty Wigginton had a huge series. So That's another good one, especially because that was a real David versus Goliath situation.
Yeah.
Where the Mets, the Yankees kind of overlooked the Mets in that series. I believe the Jeter play when he dove into the stands against the Red Sox.
Yeah.
That series was right after. And the Yankees like weren't worried about the Mets at all, it felt like. And the Mets caught him and swept him. So that was great too. But you brought up the Amed Rosario walk-off home run, and that brings us a perfect segue to this episode's estimate. You guys remember who he hit the home run against, right?
Of course, Aroldis Chapman.
Aroldis Chapman. And Aroldis Chapman has had a rough go of it, as we know. Since his return, let's see, I picked up these numbers earlier in the day. So he's been back for 8 games. He's made 8 appearances since coming back from the injured list. And he has an ERA close to 10. It's 9.95. And in his last 9 outings against the Mets, his ERA, and this is not a typo, it's not a mistake, 16.50.
Yeah. That's a lot.
16.50. And I could just rattle off the moments right now. Pete Alonso, a game-tying home run at Yankee Stadium. J.D. Davis, a game-tying home run 2 years ago, that September 3rd game when Pete hit the walk-off. The Amed Rosario walk-off home run. So, I mean, it's been big hit after big hit. So I want you guys to tell me, how many pitches is Aroldis Chapman going to throw in this upcoming Subway Series?
And it's a 2-game series, too. Yeah,
do you want to go first or second?
Oh, man. I don't know. I guess I'll go first.
Okay.
I'll go first. We'll just alternate every episode, okay. I guess, even though I'm at a deficit. But I'm going to say Aroldis Chapman throws 26 pitches.
That's a good number. I was gonna sit right in that same spot. So I guess going second, I just have to be an ass.
You're either lower or higher.
Yeah, I gotta go basically over or under 26.5. And I'm gonna go under.
Okay.
I'm gonna go 25.
All right. 25 versus 26. I have not had the best of luck in these scenarios. I've been a little ice cold. That's probably my best guess that I've made though thus far. It's called growth.
It was almost so good of a guess though. You kind of backed yourself into taking the side of that guess you wouldn't have wanted.
Probably. Yeah probably. I did 2-game series. I'm like, he's got a. It's going to be weird because there's a world where he doesn't pitch. If the Mets just smack the Yankees around, he might just not even throw a single pitch.
Or actually kind of the opposite of that, because he's been so bad recently. He's not being used in high leverage roles at all. So if the Mets are winning a game, say 8-0.
Might just let him throw 25 pitches.
You might see Chapman in the 5th inning, yeah.
Dude, if he throws 25 pitches, I'm going to lose it. I'm going to lose it. I'm like, one more! Like, where's Mark Canna when I need him? That guy takes pitches like crazy.
Also, Marcy Canna just said, it's officially Canna. Not Kenya. Yeah.
Okay.
She tweeted it exactly.
Breaking news on the pod.
Yes, breaking news. Late night breaking news, 12:20 on the pod. Tweet 34 minutes ago. So this has been a discussion of the Kenya household.
She said, I'm not all of a sudden becoming
Kenya. I'm not changing my name.
Yeah, I changed it already once. Yeah. I'm not changing it again.
Man. I've had some funny name things in the past. I was calling one of my roommates now the wrong name for like a month. He never corrected me.
Really?
Yeah, it's terrible.
Oh, that's bad. Are you bad with names?
I'm horrible with names.
Oh, I'm so good with names.
I'm terrible with names. His name is Dylan. I called him Zach. A month.
It's not even a pronunciation thing.
It's not even close. I was just incorrect. I was literally wrong. And then I found out after 5 years of living with like my longtime college roommate, one of my best friends, I was pronouncing his name wrong the whole time. He never corrected me.
Oh my God.
His name is spelled Levon. I called him Levon. And his graduation party, his grandma was there and she was calling him Levon. And I was like, is that how you say your name? He's like, yeah. And like me, his girlfriend, like two of her other friends were like, why didn't you ever tell us that? It's the wrong name. We've used the wrong freaking name for all these years. It was bizarre. But yeah, I'm bad with names.
You know me. I'm a big pronunciation guy.
Yeah, gotta be.
If someone has your name wrong, are you guys the kind of guys who are just going to be upfront like you have it wrong? Or are you going to let it slide?
No, I'll say it.
If you let it slide,
it's over. It's dead. One time, it's over.
Like, Shiano's a little easier, at least.
Shiano, I mean, it's an easy name in this part of the country.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
But you start throwing Luino out there, U-I,
yeah.
And then an O at the end, people get like the amount of Lunos or Luinos or Luano, that people throw them all out, especially at South Carolina. That was like the ultimate test of where were you from?
Yeah.
Could you pronounce my last name?
100%. I got the gym a lot when I was younger, and I was like, I don't want that at all.
Dude, bad, gym, yeah.
Bad name.
I like that.
No. But yeah, remember my driving instructor called me Jimmy, and I was like, this is one person I'm not going to tell. I'm just like, I'm only going to hang out with this guy 6 more times. I got to get out of this car.
Oh my God. Yeah, yeah. You'd be a completely different person if you were Jimmy.
Oh, I would have no similarities.
No.
I would be so significantly like less prosperous.
Would you even be doing this podcast? That's the real question.
No way. Absolutely no way. That's like if you had a K.
Yeah, yeah. Don't even get me. That's the one that gets me. Yeah, is when people put Mark with a K. I've had like family members who put K. I'm like, there's three of us, and then we're all with a C. You can't mess that up.
Yeah, what are you gonna do though? Names are hard. I don't like names.
And John, I guess you have John with no H.
Yeah.
Oh goodness. Yeah. I mean, I get all sorts of things. Sometimes people put an H early. Like, remember Johnny Peralta?
Yes.
So he spelled it J-H-O-N-N-Y, and I would pronounce it Johnny Peralta. I mean, it wasn't Johnny Peralta.
Johnny Peralta.
But sometimes people slip the H in early in the name. I'm like, where? No one spells it like that.
It's an unlikely spelling.
No, especially not unless you're from, like, Curacao.
Yes.
No, definitely not. John Barron, no way.
No, he's a Positano John. He's not Curacao John.
Johnny Threads.
Yeah, Johnny Threads.
Paisan John.
But anyway.
But anyway, best of luck to you guys. Mark, I'm kind of rooting for you this week. A three-game lead it feels a little insurmountable.
We're trying to count up the episodes we've got left. Three games might be a tough one.
I think the listeners can definitely agree that it's like one of us has to in a tuxedo. They would much rather be Mark.
Probably. My Twitter following would probably appreciate it a little bit more. Like
patent leather shoes.
Oh, my God.
That'd be so funny.
We got lots of time.
That's where he got his Gucci's from, I guess.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Maybe we could borrow them.
Yeah, maybe I could borrow them. You think I could fit into Pete's shoes? 5'9". Just no shot. Anyway, we're losing it. John, thanks for the estimate. Appreciate it.
So
let's wrap up this episode here. Episode 111 of the Messed Up Podcast. Home. Yeah, James, it's 12:25.
I gotta be up at 8 tomorrow, so I gotta bike home.
How long is the bike ride?
Half hour,
so you'll get home around 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
If everything runs smoothly.
I gotta fold my laundry. I did my laundry here during the episode just because I didn't feel like going to the laundromat this week and Mark's moving out.
So he did his laundry. We did an episode. We watched the game, and we got the Subway Series coming up. We're gonna be at both of the games most likely. Mm-hmm. Definitely on Wednesday night for sure.
I was gonna say definitely on Tuesday. I think Tuesday is the one we're on. Tuesday, we're gonna have some fun.
We're gonna have a great time no matter what. So if you guys are at the stadium, make sure you say hello. We're gonna be walking around doing some content during the game as well. So if you want to appear on the TikTok, you want to have a chance to get in an episode.
Definitely hit us up. Don't abuse this privilege, guys. I'm gonna tell you because we want to do some content with either couples or groups of friends or even siblings, family members who are split Mets and Yankees.
Yes,
we got some fun stuff we have planned, and we'd really like to talk to some people who have that situation.
So if you're around, come say what's up. We'll have stickers for you guys as well. We've been handing them out. Throw them on your phone. Throw them on your laptop.
A lot of stickers out this weekend, Friday and Saturday. A lot of people came up to me and was like, "Hey, I get a sticker. I know we can only get them in person." So it's becoming a bit of a cult thing.
It's a hot sticker.
Also, shout out the dude who I shouted out last episode from the summer camp in Monroe. I'm mentioning you again. My cousin still hasn't told me your name, but shout you out. Thanks for being a loyal listener.
There you go.
If you're ever in the game, hit us up. We'll give you a sticker too.
And if you are listening to us, where they can find us, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you get them, drop us a rating, drop us a review, download, follow, subscribe. If you're following us on our social media, at Mets Up Everywhere, we've been posting a lot on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter.
Good Jet Williams TikTok, over 10,000 views.
Yep. If you like the YouTube videos, if you like the video version of this, check out the New York Mets YouTube channel. Follow James on Twitter at
James Shiano.
Follow me at Giraffe Nick Mark. That's where we wrap it up, guys. See you after the Subway Series. Let's show the Yankees who the best team in New York is.
That's a bad soundbite. See you guys later.
Peace.
Catch you next time. Get up. Get up. Get up.